Welcome to the Agile Wire, brought to you by Wisconsin Agility. We want you to get agile and stay agile. Now here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Chad Beyer.
And we're recording. All right, Jeff, kick us off, man.
All right, we have a special bonus episode of the Agile Wire today for you. Chad and I were on the Scrum Master Toolbox podcast not too long ago, and that episode is being cross-posted across both podcast platforms. So you will have the audio on the Agile Wire today from the Scrum Master Toolbox podcast, but no video.
After this special edition podcast, we're going to return to our normal video format. And actually, our next episode, we're going to be unveiling some of our new intros, outros, and some new logos and branding. So stay tuned.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very special bonus episode of the Scrum Master Toolbox podcast. And today we have a tag team. We have with us Chad Beyer and Jeff Bubbles. Hey, Chad and Jeff, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Vasco.
Absolutely. So Jeff is a PSD, professional Scrum trainer with Scrum.org, and he's also been many roles in the Agile and I guess product development world, from product owner, Scrum Master, team member, etc. And he's also a fellow podcast host. Jeff and Chad host the Agile Wire podcast. I'll put the link in the show notes so that you guys can go and check it out. And Jeff also speaks at conferences across the US and is very active in the Wisconsin Agile community. Chad is an organizational agility advisor, change agent, and also a PSD with Scrum.org. And he's, of course, also the host of the Agile Wire podcast, definitely a podcast for you guys to check out. So let's dive into the show, gentlemen. Jeff, let's start with you. So today we'll be talking about something that I think requires a little bit of unpacking, right? You guys call this going from stressful backlogs to focused and strategic backlogs. We're talking about product owners here, of course, and all of the work that sometimes is done together with product owners by teams, Scrum Masters, and stakeholders. So tell us, Jeff, what do you mean with those terms? What is a frantic and stressful as opposed to focused and strategic backlog?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we see these patterns emerge across, you know, many clients that we work with, lots of different teams, where, you know, the things inside of their backlog, they end up becoming very almost task-based, and they try to please everybody. And so it's kind of like they're going across multiple stakeholders, multiple customers, and they're trying to keep everybody busy and keep them all, and they have all these plates spinning. And they just said, I can't get it all done. I can't do it for everybody. And they forget, well, every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And but they say yes to everything. And so that's the whole entire role of a product owner, is to make decisions and to be strategic and to maximize the value that's being delivered by the Scrum teams. And so what we mean by that is, like, the way out of it is to start focusing on outcomes for your customers and for your users and for the organization, and impacts for the organization. Like, what are they really trying to accomplish here? And then who are we doing this for? And if you start there, you start to think about options that you have. And then those options help us to become more strategic and focused on where we want to go in the future.
All right. So we've heard about the reason why it might be frantic and stressful, right? Because if we're saying yes to everybody, yeah, we're really spinning up all the plates at the same time and trying to keep them up and spinning. And of course, I can imagine how stressful and frantic that could feel. But let's unpack this a little bit more. Jeff, you use the term task-based backlogs. So explain what that is and what is the different type of backlog that you're looking for.
Yeah, so a task-based backlog might be using words like do some analysis, do some design, do some build, create the API, create the front end. Those might be the actual backlog items instead of the tasks. And so your thing might say, like, let's just say we're doing credit card processing or something like that. Like, do the analysis for the credit card processing, do the design for the credit card processing. Write the API for the credit card processing. Create the back end for the credit card processing. You know, create the microservices for the credit card processing. And there might be different people we're delegating those out to as a product owner. And at that point, you're becoming more of a project manager than you are a product owner, right? So we want to release all that control, let the team be more self-managed. And it's like, what is the thing that you want? Credit card processing. What type of credit cards? Okay, what are the rules around that? Like, you know, how, what kind of validation would we might the team need to know about? Like, let's help them get to clarity. And then like, that's one thing for the team to rally around. So instead of trying to divvy out everything to all the different team members, like focus on, here's a goal for the team to achieve and let the team figure out how to do that, right? They're very smart individuals. We pay product developers a lot of money. Like, they can handle this. They know how to do this stuff. We just have to get out of their way a lot of times.
And Chad, let's turn it on to you. So we've heard what this task-based backlog might be. And of course, you guys use a contrast. You talk about focused and strategic. So what does a focused and strategic backlog look like? Let's take the card processing example that Jeff was talking about.
Yeah. So what I always comes to my mind is when Jeff and I meet with a new product owner or an entire Scrum team, and we take a look at their backlog in a backlog refinement session. Here's what we typically find: all those tasks, right? And what we typically try to do to surface how far away we are from strategy inside of that backlog is see how long it takes to answer the question why when you look at one item on that backlog. And so let's just take the example of like create the API, a very task-based product backlog item, right? The first question is, well, why are we creating this API? And typically what we find, unfortunately, is that it takes maybe five whys before we get to the real essence of that product backlog item. And so that's kind of what we mean as far as your path to strategic inside of your backlog is zooming out. It's moving away from the granular, right? Not all the way away. We still want items that we can handle within a small iteration, but we have to zoom out and capture more of the what and the why in that statement, in anything that we document in that backlog. So when we talk about it, our conversations start in that impact outcome statement instead of down in the weeds, right? And again, this can be hard. A lot of times, teams we walk into, they're not even using sprint goals, let alone product goals. And so the backlog is just, it's a catch-all, right? It just catches everything that anyone who has access to throws into it. And so if you're a product owner, right? Imagine if you had a to-do list for things you wanted to accomplish around your house on the weekend, right? But all your neighbors could add things to the list, or anybody could, like, so many things get added. And it's like, well, I don't have time to do all that stuff, right?
Isn't it a little bit like if you would do let's imagine this cleaning example at home, I guess everybody would relate to that. And instead of writing iron the laundry, you would write iron sock one of model A, iron sock two of model A. Right. Iron the red underwear, iron the blue underwear. Like that's what a task-based backlog would sound like, right?
Exactly. Right. And then you start to ask, well, why do you need your laundry done? Well, I'm leaving for a trip on Monday and I have to have all my clothes clean so that I can pack them into my bag. Oh, well, why are you leaving on a trip, right? You find out what you're trying to accomplish by asking whys. I know it sounds really common sense, straightforward, but this is why I think Jeff and I have been kind of on a tear to sound the alarm on this. When someone is in a stress state, it's hard for them to see the forest through the trees. And so they need somebody to tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, your backlog's, tell them the kind truth, right? Your backlog's a mess, but we're going to help. Like, just zoom out a little bit, right? And get to those strategic.
Just write the pack the bag for the trip.
Exactly. So anyway, I hope that helps.
When we talk about this contrast between frantic and stressed or strategic and focused backlogs, of course, we need to figure out, okay, so but what works, right? Like you said, Chad, you said, let's tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, the backlog is a mess, but let us help you. So what have you find? Let's start with Chad. What have you find that actually works for bringing the product owners and I'm sure also the stakeholders to the realization and then the tasks they need to do in order to get that backlog to be more strategic and focused?
Yeah. So I'll just pick up where I left off on product goals, right? A lot of times there's confusion with product vision and product goal. And so product goals just don't get used. And so what's the difference? Well, product vision is something that's a little longer lived. It's like, why do you exist as a team organized around this thing you're trying to sell, right, and move forward? It shouldn't change very often. Your product goals, they're a long-term objective, right? So they're really, at the end of the day, just a theme within your backlog. And a lot of teams just don't have that categorization or organization within their backlog. So one starting point we always highlight is try creating some thematic summaries of impact and outcome statements to summarize your backlog, right? And so again, you know how when we think about, I guess, decomposition, right? Project management on project schedules, or whether it's just decomposition, you know, breaking down of your backlog items, we're recomposing at this step. We're actually, we've gone too far into the weeds and we have to recompose. So that alone, right, is a starting point to try to bring some focus for your team, focus for your stakeholders, focus for your entire product.
So let's take the example of the credit card we were talking about. Like how would you recompose, as I think that was the word you used, how would you go from all of that, those tasks, to having a theme maybe?
Yeah. So maybe like if let's just say, you know, it's credit card payment, but then we're like, well, why? What do you want? Well, you know, we want to have Google payment, or we want to be able to do these things in the future. Well, why do you want all those things? And then you're like, oh, well, our shopping cart abandonment rate is really high. And so we feel like we're losing a lot of sales that we could be getting. Oh, so we want to reduce shopping cart abandonment rate. Okay, so what are we going to do first? So we should just be able to process normal credit cards instead of only use Apple Pay or something like that. Okay, so let's run that experiment, see if that impacts things. Let's try another experiment. Maybe we need to move things around in the GUI. Maybe there's some thing from a UI user's perspective that's really getting in the way, that's really painful. Like maybe there's something else there to change that result. And so we should like look into that as a team of like, I don't know, like almost like scientists looking like, how do we change this result? We have a hypothesis, we're going to run some tests, and then we're going to rally around that. And so you only get so many things that you can work on at once. And so one of the things we really do help organizations figure out is how to rationalize the demand for solving all the problems they have and the delivery. They only have so many people to do things. If we try to stay busy doing all this busy work, all these tasks, all these activities, we don't solve really any problems for the organization.
Yeah, and that's actually the problem, right? Because when you go too far into the weeds, you get a lot of churn. You can do actually a lot of work and get nothing done from a customer or business impact perspective.
Exactly. And, you know, Scrum teams are very expensive. And so, like, I think sometimes just highlighting for a team, like, what do you really cost the organization? In the U.S., it's probably somewhere between $50,000 and $75,000 a sprint. Like, that's the average cost, I would say, that we run into many Scrum teams. And so it's like, okay, so what did we deliver in 2 weeks for that? Did we get value? Or did we just do a bunch of things? Did we do a bunch of activities? What problems did we solve for the organization? Are they getting a good deal? Because we're getting a comfortable paycheck in our bank accounts. What is the organization getting? And we should be focusing on that.
Yeah, I think if I go back to my lean roots, I would say that the biggest waste is the waste of human potential. So if you just forget about the money and think about what these people could be doing in effective and productive organizations versus what they are doing in our organization and what does it look like, right? So let's break this down for Scrum Masters, because we have a lot of Scrum Masters in the audience, and Scrum Masters want to help their product owners to kind of get started, maybe even have like a small step-by-step facilitation idea in mind to go from this stressful and frantic to focused and strategic backlog. So Chad, let's go to you. What would be maybe one, two, or three steps you would advise our Scrum Master listeners to start with so that they would get the PO at least to open to the idea that the product backlog would need to be more focused and more strategic?
Yeah. I mean, it can start in the next refinement session you're in. So here's I'm a change agent at heart. So here's my nudge to everyone listening. If you're a Scrum Master, like, don't wait to do what I'm about to tell you, like, do it in the next refinement session you're in. So one thing from a facilitation standpoint is at the beginning of a session, just reminding everybody, like, why do we even refine backlogs? Like, if we can't answer that question in a very short amount of time, then there's an educational opportunity, right? So Scrum Master lives and breathes many stances. So shared understanding, right? That's what we think of when we think of, well, what is it really there for? I mean, why do we document stuff in the first place, right? We're transferring some level of knowledge for a conversation so that we can just go build the stuff and get value from it. It's a temporary artifact. It's means to an end. So shared understanding. If you structure your next refinement session to get shared understanding for everyone in the room, that means that hopefully today you have your whole team, the people doing the work in your refinement session with the product owner, and you're refining together, right? So some tips and tricks. Shift the majority of the talk time through whatever facilitation technique you want to use to the people responsible for creating the product increment. We've walked into too many refinement sessions where the scrum master and product owner are sitting talking, like taking all the talk time in the room, and the developers are just twiddling their thumbs waiting, right? Like it's an awkward refinement session, right? So shift the majority of the talk time to the people who need to know what it is that they're going to build. Use questions to surface understanding. Use summaries to clarify understanding. So you ask a question, you validate if people in the room have shared understanding, and then if you just one step further, summarize for clarity, or have someone else summarize for clarity, right? Again, these seem like really obvious things, but they can transform a refinement session from, you know, everybody hating to take away their time for this 1 or 2 hour session to look at the backlog to actually providing value so that we know where to go next. And then another tip and trick, use diverge merge cycles. So this is kind of back to the point number one. You need to have everyone engaged in refinement. This isn't like one person takes the talk time for 20 minutes and everyone listens. So if you have a large team, or maybe you're scaling Scrum and you have many teams under a product backlog, you have to use diverge merge cycles. So you break out into sessions, you divide up small tasks. We're going to take this area of the backlog. We're going to come back with impact outcome statements crafted, and we'll validate them with the product owner. Whatever it is, you're breaking apart to be efficient with that time, and then you're coming back together to validate that you were effective with that time. So that's just, I rattled off quite a few items, all within that category of getting to shared understanding.
So let me give you a practical application of how we can apply all these things that Chad just talked about. So imagine you're a scrum master, you go into a refinement, and you said, hey, can I facilitate things a little differently today? And you say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to partner up, and you talk to the product owner beforehand, like, and you say, what items do we need to get refined? Like, I want these top 10 items ready to be worked on for the next sprint. Okay, cool. So you're like, okay, let's partner up, and we have 10 items, and let's divide up the work. So each group takes so many items, and we want you to go ahead and look at each of these items, what we have listed inside of our backlog management tool, and just ask yourself, you know, what would we need right here to start this tomorrow or right after this meeting? If we were to start this work now, right now, what questions would you need answered? We don't have to figure all the details out, all the tasks out of who's going to do what fields we're going to use, all the minor details that will emerge. But what would you need to know to get started on this right now? And take 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever the time box you want to use. Let them partner off, come back with their questions, and almost do like a show and tell when you come back. So now you went from everybody looking at one screen and one person typing, and it's very monotonous, to everybody's engaged, everybody's working on it, everybody has homework to do, everyone comes back, everybody's engaged, and we've done that diverge merge cycle. And we merge shared understanding when we come back, and then we stop. We stop when we say these product backlog items are ready to be worked. Don't get into the how, don't get into the details, because, you know, back to, you know, not liking waste from a lean approach. Like, if we go too far and then all of a sudden we change the direction we're going, that's wasteful too. So that happens all too often. So stop when you're ready. And then if you get all those things done and it's, you know, you only used a half hour or 45 minutes and you're done early in the time, go back to work, right? Like you're all ready to go. So we found these to be, not only they save time, they get people more engaged, and they get people have like a higher level of shared understanding where we have to document less, but we know more and we can deliver better results for our organizations.
And of course, that's what happens in the refinement. but we need to get the product owners ready, right? We need to get them to understand what it means to be strategic and focused. So Jeff, let's go to you. What has worked for you in the past to get the POs to realize that their goal and their role is not to write down requirements that might have been, you know, way back when in waterfall times, but rather that their role is to provide direction, focus, and strategy for the team to work on. So what has helped you guys to convince product owners to take that stance?
I think many of the product owners already, they want that. They just don't know how to get there, right? So they want to be strategic. They want to be focused. They just don't know how to do it with all the demands that are coming in. So I think the why usually isn't the struggle that I have. It's like, how do we get there? So one example of something you could do is take any of the canvases. Maybe it's a lean UX canvas. Maybe it's a lean canvas. Maybe it's a business model canvas. And you get your stakeholders and you get your Scrum team together and you try to create this one pager. That shared understanding in an hour or 2 hour session of like why we're doing what we're doing can then be a North Star to where we're going. That's really what strategy is a North Star, right? Like we're trying to help us make trade-off decisions of do we go left, do we go right? And that can be one thing. But what's really one of the things that are key about any of these models is you have limited space and limited time to do them. That focus, we could create a 100-page PowerPoint to talk about this stuff. But you know what? That would take many months and people wouldn't read it and people wouldn't use it. It has to be something that they can use, that they can remember and that they can reference quick. We can talk about it in a sprint review, maybe like for 2 or 3 minutes to kind of refresh everybody's memory. They're like, yep, that's where we're going. This is what we're doing. And then like, this is how what we did over the last sprint applies. And here's how we're going to do in the future applies to this. So I think that those things are key. How you do that. I mean, sometimes people get pretty prescriptive with roadmaps. So I guess I would say like, if you're there, like, let's try to back up from that from a second and say, like, why are we doing this roadmap and why are we putting things in it the way we're putting them? And let's really try to like outline that in some type of canvas or some type of business model. Or we've done like product boxes before for groups where they try to create like basically the software box that you're going to buy off the shelf. Like, what would that look like? What are the key features? What would we try to sell this user on? And then like when you're doing something, you're like, well, does it align to what we said we're going to do here? It can really focus the group. I've seen that, like, where, you know, a product owner says, I had this great meeting with this executive and we're going to go ahead and we're going to pivot. We're going to do this thing. And the team's like, wait, remember like a few months ago when we did that activity, like, this doesn't seem like it aligns to that. And the product owner's like, oh, yep, you're right. I need to go back and talk to that person. Like, this is not the direction that we want to go. This is not that strategic direction. This is a bigger decision. I need to have some more conversations. So those are some things to think about, many different ways to get there, but definitely some type of visualization that helps you to identify, you know, the direction that you're going.
And when you think about this, you were talking about like the product box exercise and so on, which are kind of, you call it, what was it? Reconstructing? No, it was...
Yeah, like reconstructing your very detailed backlog into something that's like, here are the origins.
I like to use the word synthesis, right? Like you get a lot of data points and then you kind of try to aggregate that into something that is coherent, right? Because when you have a lot of data points and you don't have a coherent view, it becomes noise, right? Mm-hmm. And frantic and stressful backlog is very often noise when it comes to delivering outcomes and impacts. Chad, let's take it to you. What have you found in your practice that helps the product owner to step out of the noise and to realize, even before we do those exercises, that they are falling victim to the idea of being very specific about everything they're asking, right? Like, and producing a lot of noise that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes back to, every time I think about strategy, I think about the word focus. And it doesn't mean everything in strategy is focus, but so much of it is, right? So anything you can do, especially for Scrum Masters, right? Anything you can do to help your product owner. I mean, one practical thing, next week, maybe after you listen to this, start the conversation by just asking your product owner, does your product backlog right now bring, like, does it make you feel stressed and why? Or does it bring you joy and why? Like, that might be an interesting start to the conversation, because you could start to throw all these tactical tips and tricks we're throwing at you, but maybe you don't need those right now. So just start with asking your product owner, how are they feeling? Like, do they feel stressed? And then whatever comes out of that conversation, check it against the things that we've shared today, and then maybe work towards that, right? So it could be that you just need to bring more focus to those items. And some of this work can be done in advance, like we said earlier, of even involving the entire team. When it comes to ordering decisions, right? Let's say it's hard to start ordering all those granular items, but let's say we go to a team refinement session and we zoom things out a little bit, right? So now we're at a little higher level in our product backlog. Now you might be able to bring some of that strategy and focus just by making some tough trade-off decisions, right? I'm a broken record. I've said this phrase probably way too many times at this point, but life and business is about trade-offs. Like, there will always be something else that you want to do with your time in life and business. And so a product owner, right, if you think about the essence of what they're there for, they're there to make those trade-off decisions day in and day out. So anything they can do to help themselves and the organization make swift, effective, strategic decisions within that space for your product, the better, right? So sometimes even just changing the way you think about ordering. Jeff said another thing that we say often, right? Every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. So what is that something else? Should you consider it? Some of our, you know, things to avoid, don't confuse order with the categorization we talked about. At the end of the day, what makes Scrum so effective in the Agile space is the simplicity. You put your stuff in a list and you order it and you pull from the top of the list. Like, there's a lot more to Scrum, but the essence of the backlog there, like, that's a pretty simple mechanism. And it's based on real life. I have some things to do on the weekend, right? I put it on a list, I go do it. So, like, don't lose sight of the simplicity of the framework. It can really bring the focus and reduce the stress by just keeping it simple.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. I just need to order this list. Rinse,
and
repeat.
The keeping it simple is very powerful also for our own guidance as Scrum Masters and Agile coaches, because we need to have a clear message that whether we like it or not, will need to be repeated many times over. A previous manager of mine once told me that if you want anything to happen, you have to repeat it 17 times. So how many times have you said that? Not 17? Well, then you need to repeat it.
Yeah.
So repetition is definitely a key, that a tip that we can use as Scrum Masters and Agile coaches. But when you guys have worked with many product owners, so it benefits us as Scrum Masters kind of be ready for what's coming. So share with us, let's start with Chad. What are some of the usual problems teams and product owners face when they start their journey with you, from stressful and frantic to focused and strategic backlogs?
Yeah, I'd say one common pattern that we've seen over and over again is that, unfortunately, I have to preface it with unfortunately, the company culture has for years turned everybody into an order taker. And that doesn't mean that's blame on the people on the team. It just means they've gotten used to just having things handed down, spoon-fed as a solution on a backlog instead of a problem statement. And so I think it can, if you rip the Band-Aid off on this, it can be quite jarring for a team who's used to having create the API in their backlog to, what was the problem? You know, reduce shopping cart abandonment rate. They're like, what is shopping cart? But, you know, not to discount people on the team, but there's just sometimes they don't care. Right. And they would care, back to the repetition, the more they just start doing things in that new way. So I think that closing the gap between used to getting solutions in your backlog to getting problem statements, it doesn't happen overnight, right? So I think that's just something to be aware of, but it's not, don't let that hold you back. It's just, I think it's a common theme. I mean, Jeff, would you agree?
Yeah.
That's a theme, and I'm sure you've got the next one queued up as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm thinking of, you know, a quote we say all the time. It's Craig Larman. It's, you know, culture follows structure. And so I think what we find in organizations is that the structure is that each of these backlogs or teams are aligned around a component or a technology or something that isn't aligned to outcomes or impacts for the organization. And because of that, they have multiple handoffs inside of the organization. And so then when they look at us and they say, but Chad and Jeff, how do I do that? We're just an API team. How do I affect the, you know, shopping cart abandonment rate? We can only do this part. Then we're going to hand it off to these other three teams. And so I don't have control of that. And so then that becomes down to an organizational structure and having real true cross-functional teams that are problem-solving teams and doing that. But, you know, that seems so big for a lot of people. Like, how do we even get started? And how do we even get that get some kind of change happening there? And so one of the common things that we tell almost every organization before we even get started with them is start tracking those dependencies. So you want to go ahead and you want to reduce shopping cart abandonment rate. I don't think you'll have any executive or leader in the organization stakeholder saying we shouldn't do that if that's like your strategy. Like, okay, great. I love that you're thinking that way. They're going to say, we want to solve problems. And then if you say, well, the problem is that we're the API team. And every time we make a change, that front end team's got to do something. Like, what if we ran an experiment where we said, hey, I think we can do this faster if we just add that skill to our team, and maybe we give them some API skills so they can solve some of the problems they're trying to look for. Like, if we track and say, like, we're waiting on this one group the most and like the most frequently and the longest, like, that's a no-brainer. Like, take that number one problem, add that skill set to your team and reduce that delay and see what happens to your cycle times. They'll probably get really much faster. The organization will be happy because your delivery is faster and they'll be solving more problems for them. They'll be like, okay, let's try the next one. And then your number two becomes your number one. And maybe you try that one next. Right. And at a certain point, there is a law of diminishing returns. Like, once in a while, you might need a lawyer on your team, the approved legal copy. Probably don't want a lawyer on your team 100% of the time. Like, that might be a point where you don't do that. But like, most organizations have gone too far in the specialty realm. And Chad and I say this all the time, like, specialty is the enemy of agility. So if you want to be responsive and adaptive to change and you're very, very specialized, you're only going to be able to do one thing. You're not going to be able to be very, very adaptive and responsive.
So don't be surprised, Scrum Masters, if you start pulling on that thread of like, hey, why are we organized this way? Like, you're going to probably uncover a significant organizational structure impediment that you may have to spend years working towards, right? I mean, again, a lot of times this will present itself in your backlog. You'll actually, instead of having a flat, simple list like we talked about earlier, you'll have layers, parent-child relationships in your backlog, epic, feature, user story, and it's a full-time job for somebody to maintain the relationship and all the coordination of keeping those relationships. Our suggestion, don't do that. Keep a flat backlog, right? You can have an epic in your backlog, but it's just going to break down over time into a smaller piece. And then you keep track of the impact outcome statement for that. So that presents itself, right? But the organizational structure impediment, it presents itself in what your backlog looks like today. So roll up your sleeves as you start to work towards this, because you're probably going to just uncover many more impediments as you go.
So you guys have been using a term, impact outcome statements, quite extensively. And we'll put a link on the show notes for people to go in and research and investigate that more. But for those of us that are listening and are curious right now, what do you guys mean exactly? Jeff, let's go to you. What do you guys mean with impact and outcome statement?
Yeah, so an outcome is a behavior that you're looking from somebody else, right? Typically, it's a customer or a user. If you're an internal team, it might even be internal people that, you know, that you're looking for something to happen. And so you're tracking that. So shopping cart abandonment, I don't want people to leave our e-commerce site with things on their cart that they haven't paid for. Like, I want to reduce the rate that happens. Like, they thought about buying it, but then they just decided not to. Like, why? Was our shipping cost too high? Was there something in the way from them hitting checkout? Was our form too complicated? Like, what is that thing? And so that's an outcome. We're trying to accomplish a goal there. And then the reason we have an outcome is because we want to have a benefit as an organization. Like, organizations exist to solve problems for people, for our customers, for our users. But they also need money to survive. And so sometimes it's money, right? And they say, well, we're losing out on a lot of revenue. And so we want to increase our revenue. And one way we think we can do that is to go ahead and reduce the amount of shopping cart abandonment rate that we have. And so these things link together, but you can't just say like, I want more revenue. If you say that's not strategy, that's a desire. And I think that's where we see a lot of organizations. We need to increase revenue by 12% in the next quarter. Okay, how? Tell me, what is our strategy? Like, are we, you know, that's the next step to ask as a product owner and try to figure out, like, we have to narrow that down into something that's more strategic and focused, or we're just going to be doing a lot of stuff.
And this is where the conversation about options would come in, right? Because if we want to increase revenue by 12%, then the product owner and the team can work out some ideas, options to do that, and then, you know, get that conversation going and finally narrow the conversation down to one specific strategy to get that outcome, rather than a list of things like, you know, do this API, add this cart processing system or whatever it is.
Exactly. And it's amazing how when you understand the bigger picture, when you're making micro changes as the person building, like, you can make changes that become more easier to change in the future, or more emergent, or you find these great ideas of how to make it even better and enhance it because you're in the work and you see these opportunities. So I think that's, you know, we have this problem where people are disengaged at work. And I think the core to that is that you're separating people from the value that they're providing to the organization, to customers, and to users. If you see the value you're producing, that's a pretty motivating thing. At least it is for me.
Yeah. And that's, to piggyback on that, right? That's why, like, the step to get to outcome impact, right? It starts, basically, there's a spectrum. You have activities. I clocked 40 hours this week. Congratulations. Here's your paycheck. Like, it seems kind of strange, but we do that a lot still in organizations. And then you get to outputs, like, you know, cycle time measurements or something like that, right? Velocity, whatever it is.
Throughput.
Then you get to outcomes and then to impacts. We don't want to waste our time anymore. Like, it's 2023. Newsflash, everybody. We don't, like, if you just imagine you're the owner of the organization you work for, and it's your money that you're investing in the team every 2 weeks. 50 to 75K every 2 weeks. If your team, you have two options. One team, they clock 40 hours each week and they deliver nothing for four sprints. The other team, I'll be extreme. Let's say they only work 10 hours a week, but they release 12 outcomes for the organization that make an impact for the organization. Which team would you want to pay for?
Yeah, right? Especially if, like, you reduce cart abandonment. I mean, come on.
Absolutely. So, like, but how ridiculous is it? And I think this is going to, my prediction, I think, we're going to continue to see organizations that do this well, because Jeff and I talk about this all the time, the way we run our organization. Sometimes we don't clock 40 hours a week, but you know what? We pat ourselves on the back and feel really good with how we're using our time. And that's what matters. What are you doing in that week? It doesn't matter how many hours you clock. It matters what outcome you made. So we really got to let go of this activities-based measurements and incentives in our organizations. I know that's like a tangent for a whole nother episode probably, but it really does have a major impact on the things we're talking about, right? Speaking in outcome and impact statements should not be foreign in any organization. It should be the norm. And we really got to, like, leave this historical keeping people busy mentality behind us. Or you can do whatever you want. You don't have to do that, but those organizations probably aren't going to survive when they're weighed against the organizations of the future.
Absolutely. All right. So, last question. We're getting close to the end here. Jeff, let's start with you. For those that want to know more, what's one resource you would recommend? Could be a book, a blog, a podcast, anything. Just one resource for people who want to know more about this.
Yeah, I guess I'll do a selfish plug for our AgileWire podcast again. Like, we're approaching episode 100. So, like, that's, you know, there's a lot of content out there. Most of ours are long form podcasts. They're an hour-ish conversation with different people in the Agile community. Very conversational, like this, like these types of episodes. So yeah, if you're looking for more, another podcast, which everybody needs another podcast, I think, in their life, right? You could always go there. Those are great resources. I'm going to make a selfish plug here for Chad too, because Chad has some amazing Agile songs out there. So if you're just an Agile like lover and you're like, I need to have some fun, I need something to build me up in my day, go look up Agile songs on YouTube. He's got a ton of these funny songs, new ones coming out. I keep nudging him to do it more frequently, these shorts. So hopefully more and more content keeps coming out. I find a lot of joy in them, and I think a lot of other people do too.
Absolutely. We'll put the link to both of those on the show notes. All right. So, Chad, Jeff already did the plugs. How about you? What's one resource you want to send our listeners to learn more about this backlog?
Man, one resource. I'm really trying to rack my brain of all the books that left the biggest impression. If you just go look for anything with the word impact or outcome in a book title. I'm blanking on unless I pull up my Kindle library right now, I'm blanking on the one that left the biggest impression, but anything that gets you thinking about outcomes, impacts, experimentational mindset. I mean, I guess if you haven't read The Lean Startup yet, a lot of people have, but I'll plug it again. I'm sure it's been plugged probably over 100 times on your podcast by now, Vasco. But if you still haven't read that book, consider it, right? That's the beginning of getting into this problem statement, experimentational mindset. And then any book that in the Agile space, product space that has the word impact or outcome in it, go after it and consume it.
Absolutely. The Lean Startup also comes with a tip. If you just read the first 100 pages, you'll get the essence of it. And then you can go and read a lot of other books that talk about the same. We have a few episodes here on the podcast, as do Chad and Jeff also on their podcast, about this mindset of thinking about impacts and outcomes. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much to both of you for your generosity with your time and your knowledge.
Yeah. Thanks, Vasco. It was a blast.
Thanks for having us.
Hi there, Agile friends. Thank you for sticking around. This year's first global summit dedicated to the product owner role in Scrum will have some amazing keynotes and two tracks filled with firsthand stories and experiences for product owners to learn more about that critical Scrum role. We'll have Roman Pichler, author and product expert, who'll be answering your questions and sharing the most important aspects of the product owner role. We'll also have Colleen Johnson talking about why roadmaps are probably making your life much harder than it needs to be, and what to do instead. This talk was quite a success in Agile Online Summit 2022, and Colleen has learned some new tricks, tools, techniques that she will share with us when it comes to roadmaps for the product owner role. And we will also have Henrik Niberi, author of Scrum and Kanban from the Trenches, as well as one of the creators of the Spotify model. So come in and listen to his stories. And we'll also have, of course, two tracks with many more sessions and even some live sessions. The two tracks will cover practices every product owner should know, where we'll be hosting conversations on topics that product owners need to be familiar with, like product backlog refinement, planning, and much more. The second track will be on metrics, measuring product and personal success as a product owner. As product owners, it's crucial to have a clear understanding of what are the metrics that drive success for us, and of course also for the products and businesses that we work with, and we need to continuously measure and optimize those metrics. So in this track, we'll be sharing what's working and what's not in the area of measuring success for product owners. We will also have the opportunity to network with our peers. It's a network event, of course, so get your tickets and join our Slack. Go to bit.ly/productowner2023. That's all one word, all lowercase. As always, we will have free tickets and VIP tickets, which will give you long-term access to the content of this summit. So check them out at bit.ly/productowner2023. All lowercase, all one word. I'll see you on the summit floor.